The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Mario Rosenstock sitting in for Matt Cooper on The Last Word. Time now for The Last Word on the environment. And of course, the evergreen John Gibbons is here. Hi, John.
Hi, Mario.
Great to see you.
Likewise.
Great. What have you got for us today? Because we're going to talk about three things. We're going to talk about Electric Picnic, first of all. We're going to talk about then Elon Musk and Trump's interview and the climate aspect of that, which was a complete disaster, a disgrace, to be honest with you. And we're going to look at this thing called AMOC. AMOC, A-M-O-C, and why we should be worried about that if that is soon to collapse. So Electric Picnic is going green, John, in 2024. So from your perspective, what does this mean and does it mean anything? Now, bear in mind, we are partners with the Electric Picnic. Be careful.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I was down there last year doing a thing. It actually cost me my viewing of Rick Astley, so I'm still a little bit sore about that, you know. So I'm off again tomorrow for the weekend, and this time no strings, no obligations, so straight to the action. So that's the first giveaway, Mario. I like these type of events. And also, if we're going to do tourism, right, let's do staycations. So in a sense, Electric Picnic is a staycation. It's basically a stay-at-home event. So a lot of people go to Electric Picnic maybe instead of going to the Canaries or something like that. So from that point of view, generally speaking, the number one impact of any event, whether it's a large sporting event, a large festival or similar, is in fact the travel component to it, right? So, for example, I was looking at some of the numbers on this event called Tomorrowland, which happens in Belgium every year. Massive thing. 400,000 electronica dance heads. Imagine that in the one field. And they worked out that their carbon impact over the weekend is 150,000 tons. But most of that, Mario, about 70% of it, is because people are flying in. They even charter in aircraft. So the big impact. So you go to an event like that and you kind of think, well, the big impact here is the diesel generators and so on. It's not. It's how people get to the event.
Right.
Now, in the case of Electric Picnic, it's down in Stradbally in the Irish countryside. Most people will drive. Some people will get the bus. Hopefully people will car share. Some people will be in electric cars. Some people will... Maybe they'll be on cargo bikes, I'm not sure. But that's going to be the main impact. So relative to many other things that we do, that type of footprint is relatively good on an event like the Electric Picnic. That's really for openers. Now, they have made moves and they're making moves down there to move towards a more renewable offering. So, for example, the kind of things like you see these great big diesel generators I just referred to, they're basically powering everything. They're electric generators, but they're diesel powered. Now, the plan really over the next number of years would be to replace these generators with basically fields of solar panels. Now, you can actually assemble a field of solar panels basically in a few days. Now, so why don't we have a situation where the car parks, which are huge at these events, are not covered by solar panels? So basically you park under them and those solar panels with battery backup would power the entire event. So that again, it shaves off the carbon impact. Now, of course, there are other impacts. I mean, as the saying goes, you can't make an omelette without breaking eggs. So anything that we do, whenever 70,000 people get together in a field, there are impacts. So we've obviously got one of the big painful ones, I think, for a lot of people around Electric Picnic and other events has been the throwaway tents. We've seen a lot of this where basically the tents, this is sort of a byproduct of kind of modern capitalism. The tents are too cheap, Mario, to start with. You can buy them in Halfords or somewhere for 20 or 30 quid. These little wretched little...
Fast tents.
Yeah, these are fast. These are kind of fire and forget. They pop out of the bag. They're impossible to get back in the bag. And to be honest with you, people just walk away from them. They're kind of ruined, especially if it's been wet over the weekend. These things are ruined. So what you see is a kind of the modern day Battle of the Somme scenes on the Monday morning after the Electric Picnic and these events where the photographers, the papers love to go down to take these tutty pictures saying, oh, the state of people today, humanity's on a slide. Look at this field. So that is an issue. I think some festivals have been making efforts to deal with this. For example, there's obviously the glamping thing, which I'm happy to report. I'm on that particular ticket this weekend. And that means you rent the tent that you're going to. Now, obviously, there's an affordability issue there. So some festivals have taken the next level and they let you rent a regular tent. So the idea is you pay your 30 or 50 quid, whatever it is, you rent the tent and you leave the tent. So you bring your sleeping bag and you bring that home. So it's really a lot of the disposable stuff that we need to be looking at. Now, I was also briefly at All Together Now down in Waterford last weekend. The life I have. And I mean, it was terrific.
You're just going around with a poncho on you all the time.
Pretty much. Well, it's more of a paunch than a poncho now these days, but we won't talk about that, Mario. Yeah. But no, but at All Together Now, one thing I did notice was there was an effort being made by the organisers to get those, you know, those cans that are fully recyclable.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a special area set up for them. So I had a look in that and there were a few hundred cans in it. Then I had a look in the general rubbish thing. There were thousands of cans in that. So I'm sorry to say, especially when people have had a few jars and when they're getting into the swing of festivals, all our best laid plans tend to end up in the rubbish heap, in the unsorted rubbish.
You really are some crack to have at the festival,
I know.
You're going around and you're going, excuse me, can I just ask you about that can there? Listen, mate, I'm just trying to enjoy Spandau Ballet, if you wouldn't mind. So like, would you just at the can, please? Would you just put it into this one here, please?
Yeah, would you mind sorting your plastics, please? And also, would you fold your socks? For the love of God, would you fold your socks?
Just for listener information, I've known John for a number of years and he's been on my podcast a number of times and he really isn't stuck up or anything like that or a tight ass, I swear. I mean, well, who are you looking forward to seeing at Electric Picnic? Just to prove your credentials.
Okay, there's my daughter's telling me that you've caught me flat now. The main act tomorrow night, Friday night, who's probably, it's not Rick Astley, I know that. I guess I can go, I'll kick for touch and say that I'm looking forward to seeing Kylie, right? So thank God I thought of somebody. But I love to go around to there's all kinds of events. There are side events. There was somebody called Mr. Fish, I think it was, at the Electric Picnic last year. It's a sort of a weird kind of I can't quite describe it. Almost like a circus music. It was fantastic. And we found that in a little tent.
Okay, John, stay in your lane. Let's go back to the environment. This is not working. Okay, let's go to Elon Musk and Donald Trump. So give us your overall picture of what was going on here. So he did a space interview on X with Trump. And, you know, it turned out into a pretty much a rambling series of non sequiturs and drivel from Trump. But there was a climate aspect to it as well.
There certainly was. And it was Bill McKibben, who's a very well-known environmental writer, he coined it the dumbest climate conversation of all time, which is high praise considering we've had some really, really dumb conversations. And I think anybody used to trust, or did I invent a word called trusk? This is when you basically take Musk and Trump and you merge them. So anyone used to Trump will know that basically pretty much everything he says is a lie. And if it's not a lie, he meant it to be a lie. I'll give you a small example, right? He said that sea level rise, he said, it's 1/8 of an inch over the next 400 years. Now, Trump is based in Florida. Florida is going underwater as we speak. The insurance industry is abandoning coastal areas in Florida. So for a guy to say this, by the way, the actual sea level rise is 1/3 of an inch per annum, not 1/8 of an inch over 400 years.
We have this clip. This is extraordinary and disappointing.
You know, the biggest threat is not global warming, where the ocean's going to rise 1/8 of an inch over the next 400 years. And you'll have more oceanfront property, right? The biggest threat is not that. The biggest threat is nuclear warming.
Apart from the fact that his dentures are falling out while he was talking, I mean, the oceanfront property stuff is just bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, we go to the ocean because we like the beach. Now, beaches are going to disappear, sadly, as well. In many cases, many of the world's beaches are going to be gone by mid-century as well. So the notion that we're going to have more oceanfront with sea level rise is, it's so counterintuitively dumb that only Trump, the way he reasons, could get away with it. But for me, Mario, it's one thing, as I say, Trump just rambles and lies. It's what he does. Nobody expects anything else. What's more disappointing is Musk. Mm. Because there was a time, and I'm old enough, as they say, to remember, for example, as a Tesla driver for 6 years, I remember once upon a time thinking he was kind of cool. You know, Tesla were leading the way in the electrification of cars. He was very much an advocate for clean energy. He even used to say some pretty sensible things around environment and energy. But basically, he has since developed MAGA head. And he is obviously, he went full MAGA head recently, where he basically declared himself for Trump. And now it's all in. And the problem with that, of course, means you have to sign up for all the nonsense. So again, what we see with Musk here is just a whole bunch. I'll give you a small example. He says, he creates these straw man arguments, Mario. So for example, if we were to stop using oil and gas right now, we'd all be starving and the economy would collapse. Nobody is saying that for a second. No, and you see, this is a classic tactic, where you say you create a ridiculous proposal and then you reject that ridiculous proposal. No. Nobody at all. What we are saying is that we need an urgent energy transition away from fossil fuels and towards renewables. Everybody who follows the science or has the remotest interest in science knows that. Well, and Musk is smart enough to know this. And this is the disturbing thing. What we see here is ideological capture of the smart guys in the room, which is really scary.
But he's shilling for Trump. That's what he's doing, because the last people he wants in power are Democrats, who are much more likely to regulate his infernal.
That's right. And one of the things that Trump was praising Musk for was his cracking down on the unions. And this has been a big thing for Musk.
I heard it.
Yeah,
they laughed about firing people.
This is fantastic. And Musk, you know, you're a great, great anti-union guy. The funny thing is, most people, including people in America, are aware that trade unions mean things like, trade unions got us things like the 5-day week, so that we don't actually work 6 and 7 days a week. They got us minimum wage. They got us basic living standards. So this anti-union thing isn't flying quite as well as he thinks. But the general sort of spiel, I suppose, from Musk, and I will give you an Irish angle, Mario, because there's always an Irish angle. Back in June, Musk falsely tweeted claims that there was no climate impact from global agricultural systems. He even weighed in with a tweet about what he called Ireland's culling of 200,000 cows. This is just one of these complete nonsense stories. Of course, cows are culled, as in go to slaughterhouses every single day of the week. But this was another one of these culture war things. That's what this is all about.
Okay, just briefly, John, in about a minute and a half, what is AMOC and why should we be worried about that it might soon collapse?
Sure. Well, the AMOC is the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, which is the fancy way of saying that this is the vast amount of heat energy that is transferred in the oceans from the equator, from the Caribbean region, up to northwestern Europe. So Ireland, for example, we're at the same line of latitude as Newfoundland. So if we had the same climate as Newfoundland, basically we'd be frozen over about 7-8 months of the year. Mm. The reason that we're not is because this giant current transfers vast amounts of energy, what's called a petawatt of energy, which is the equivalent of 1 million nuclear power stations of energy. So our temperatures here, our mean temperatures here, are much warmer than our line of latitude would suggest. Mm. The danger at the moment is, because of climate change, that current is breaking down. Scientists are now projecting, Mario, they thought this was something maybe for a couple of hundred years out. The leading guy on this, Stefan Ramsdorf, who I actually interviewed about this in Dublin last year, he said we're now approaching a 50% chance of a full tipping of this system in the 21st century, with 2037 being the earliest date that this could occur by. So we're talking about something that could, in theory, happen in little over a decade. Now, briefly, what does that mean? If the AMOC were to fully shut down, basically northwestern Europe, Ireland included, our mean temperature over maybe one or two decades would drop by about 10 degrees centigrade. So that means, in the middle of a global warming episode, you would have a regional cooling event that would basically, for example, grass only grows above 7 degrees centigrade. So all our grass would stop growing, our agriculture systems would collapse, and Irish people, especially, you know, the Coolock says no people, they might find themselves climate refugees begging other countries to let us in.
John, enjoy the last ever electric picnic. John Gibbons on the environment. I'm going home to hit the bottle, carbon neutral bottle. And thanks, John, for everything you do and coming in here.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.